dive into the world of scientific innovation with Dr. K Lab's cutting-edge research on amino acids. Amino acids, often referred to as the building blocks of life, play a crucial role in various bodily functions. Now, why Dr. K Lab Amino Acid 1800? Well, because it contains valine, leucine, and isoleucine that support active adults with post-workout recovery. These amino acids are not made in the body. Vitamin E is also added for added antioxidant and immune support. During workout, for resistance exercises and longer workouts, another dose may help. Post-workout, for improved muscle recovery, all workouts could use a cool-down dose of amino acids. And last but not least, you can take them before bed. This one is best for bodybuilders to prevent catabolism during sleep. Discover a new dimension of wellness with your groundbreaking research and formulations.
Hey everyone, this is Recent here, and I am really honored to be able to partner up with this amazing brand called Dr. K Lab. So what we're going to do is we're going to host a giveaway, and we are going to give you one amino acid and one protein shaker from Dr. K Lab. So how you're going to participate is very simple. You got to comment on this post and write down why you want to take amino acid and how it's going to benefit your workout. All right. So stay tuned for the lucky winners.
Do you ever wonder if you are living your best life? Do you question if you are truly happy? Do you feel stuck and unsure about how to move forward? If any of these questions resonate, then this episode is for you. Hi, my name is Rayson, and I'm your host for The Legacy Show. And in this episode, we've invited a luxury interior designer. And she's really fabulous because she's not just an interior designer, but also an author. And her name is none other than Jean Collins. Jean is an award-winning interior designer who left the corporate world behind to find her true self through design and internal reflection. Her firm, with executives and entrepreneurs focusing on projects that combine sophistication and balance with inner and outer wellness. Winner of the 2022 Lux Magazine Rate Award, she was also nominated as an HGTV Designer of the Year. She chronicles her journey and the approach that changed her life and work in a memoir, Two Feet In, Lessons from an All-In Life. So now, let's give it up to Jean Collins. Woohoo! Hey, Jean, welcome
Thanks,
to the
Rayson.
Podcast.
Thank you. What an introduction. Wow, that's going to be a hard act to follow. Wow, thank you so much. I'm so excited to get to talk to you. I feel like I should be like, hands up. Like, yeah.
Woohoo! Yeah. I'm really honored and really thankful for you to be on the podcast, and also for Book Thinkers to actually introduce both of us together. So for those of you who are not sure of Book Thinkers are actually the platform that actually brought many of our guests into the podcast, people like Jean, people like Marcus, who is coming soon, and so many other people that's coming on board the podcast as well. So I'm really, really excited to actually have so many amazing authors with rich experience and also amazing stories to share with us on the podcast. And anyway, Jean, how have you been?
I'm good. Thank you. I can't believe it's already almost the end of January. It's like, where's the time going? So, but I'm good. You know, I live in Connecticut in the United States, and it's winter and it's cold and it's icy, and the faster this season passes, as far as I'm concerned, the better. So I'm ready for it to be a little warmer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like these days, the weather has been really cranky. January usually should be warm, but it was very cooling for the past 3 weeks or so. In Singapore, especially, it has been raining nonstop for many days. Yeah.
That's depressing.
Oh, yeah. I know, right? How about over in Connecticut? Is it raining or is it very warm? Or
It is not warm. It snowed last week, so we got a little snow. So there's a little white outside. It was a little icy. Today, unfortunately, I'm going to look outside to check. It's not sunny yet. It's supposed to get sunny. Don't mind. I personally don't mind the cold as long as we see the sun. It's when you go days without the sun that I start to get a little depressed. So, sun and cold, I'm okay with. Not my favorite, granted, but so hopefully the sun will come out later because I just feel like it makes me a little happier to see the sun.
Right, I get it. So, you know, Gene, there's so many people that's tuning in to our podcast and they would want to know, like, can you share with the audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Yes, I would love to. So I am Gene Collins. And I live in Connecticut in the United States. And I am someone who is incredibly passionate about sharing my story and helping others learn from my story so that I can hopefully motivate them, inspire them, and also help people feel connected to my story because I'm not a celebrity. I'm not famous. But I think there's a lot about my story and my journey, whether it's what's happened to me personally or what I've done in my career, that I've learned a lot of lessons and I love the opportunity to get to share them. So right now for my career, I'm on career shift number 3, I think. I run a luxury interior design studio here in New England. And I also am an author. I wrote my book, which is great. And I'm working on starting a motivational speaking career and will be launching my own podcast, which I will have to have you on in the summer. Awesome. So where we get to talk about all kinds of things. And I'm excited to turn the tables and interview a lot of the people that have interviewed me on their podcast, because I think that would be really fun too. So that's me.
Nice.
I'm also a single mom. I have a daughter who's 17. I have 2 dogs. So I have a great boyfriend who has a dog. So I almost have three dogs. So life is really good.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I can tell life is really good for you. I mean, award-winning interior designer and also at the same time, author and soon to be motivational speaker and podcaster as well. Wow, that's really fabulous. And just curious, have you ever thought of what is the name of the podcast going to be like?
Yes. So I actually spent a lot of time on this. And for entrepreneurs, this is always a challenge because, you know, entrepreneurs go one or two ways, right? You either have one business and that's your passion and that's it. But I found as I've been talking to entrepreneurs that I am like a lot of them, that you keep coming up with these ideas and these passions, and then you end up with all these like arms that go off of all of your passions. Because once you get started, you're like, oh, wouldn't this be fun? And I had said, oh, I would never want a podcast. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh my goodness, I have so many ideas. How can I not do this? So I've decided that Jermar Designs brand is what I started my interior design business as the name and the brand for that. But I've decided I'm going to expand that brand, and Jermar Designs is going to become a lifestyle brand, of which the podcast will be part of it. So it'll be the Jermar Designs show. And it's a roadmap to truly living. And so that the motivational speaking will be under that same brand umbrella. And so is the interior design business, because that is truly a roadmap to truly living, and it all starts with people's homes. It starts with inside them and it starts with their homes. And I feel really passionate about that concept. And so all of these different business units will fall under Jermar Designs as the big brand. So look for Jermar Designs to grow. I'm not sure we'll become Nike, but you know, we'll become something, which is fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it will be like Under Armour of interior design, right?
Exactly.
If you're not looking at Nike, then yes, Under Armour and all. And just out of curiosity as well, what will the podcast be focusing on then? Is it going to be like interior design / lifestyle / motivation or some aspects of business or everything?
It really will focus. It'll focus on the things that I'm passionate about. So it will have a spin on interior design where it can educate the listeners, really more from a back end side, you know, getting to talk to architects, I have friends who are photographers in the interior design industry. It's fascinating to speak to a photographer who shoots for professional designers and their work is in a book, you know? So it's really interesting to understand their journey as artists also, because interior design, there's a lot to interior design and there are a lot of people on the back end. So it'll talk about the things I'm passionate about. So interior design, focusing on wellness, nutrition, women's health, I think is really important. And so having people on, and then also I have a huge passion for entrepreneurs and trying to help people who want to take that leap into starting their own business. And so focusing on having podcasts to give them exposure to success stories of other people who have made that leap and learning how they did it and what they did, because we've all done the leap, but we've done it differently. And so I think there's so much you can learn by listening to other people's stories about how they've found success in their lives and how by taking some risks, they feel like they are truly living. And that's the goal, is to share things that help people get excited and motivated about truly living. And some of that is exposing people to some different careers that are out there too. A lot of people that I know are really stuck in that corporate America box, and sharing with them, you know, what other people are doing with their passions. And I think that can inspire people to take a little more control of their lives and take a little risk. So that's what it'll be about. It'll be coming out in the summer, the Jermar Design Show.
All right. And I'm really looking forward to be a part of it in summer as well. And, it's quite interesting, you know, you being an entrepreneur, but beforehand you were a student. And then after that, you have passion for interior design and you went on to do something that's not related to interior design at first. And then after that, coming to which you became a luxury interior designer. So can you tell us a bit about that backstory on how you actually became who you are today?
Right. The story that's in the memoir. So I have an undergraduate degree in college of communications. And I graduated from the University in Arizona. And I went to go work, you know, I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I went to go be a sales assistant for someone at a paper company. And then I got fired. Like, you know, my experience with getting fired happened pretty early on. So I got fired. And then I ended up working in the restaurant business. So I ended up being a catering manager and waitressing and worked in the restaurant business for about 8 years. And actually during that time, went back to school to get my master's in food service. And halfway through that program, I realized that it wasn't food service that I really liked. It was food marketing that was interesting to me. But that meant I had to change business schools. And so I decided I couldn't afford to pay that because I was going to NYU in New York. And it was very expensive, the business school. So I decided I was going to go get a job and get a job with a company that was going to help pay for that for me, for that education. So I ended up getting a sales job. And that started my sales career. So I got a sales job working in consumer promotions and I worked for that company for 10 years and I worked my way up and, you know, had a nice territory. And ironically, I started that journey wanting to be in food marketing. I wanted to work for Kraft. And I ended up focusing on beauty and I became the beauty queen. And so I worked with L'Oreal and Revlon and talked beauty all day, which was just not what I thought my path would be, which is kind of an interesting lesson for people. You never know where you're going to go. From there, I left that job and started another one. And I worked at that one for 11 years. And in that one, I ran a sales team. So I ran an advertising sales team. And then I got fired. And it was right before I turned 50. It was almost 4 years ago. It was a little more than 4 years ago. And I kind of was like, you know, defined myself by that VP job. It was that, and I was a single mother. And I wasn't realizing at the time how unhappy I was or the physical stress and how much that was hurting my body. So after I lost my job, I just really spent some time reflecting and figuring out who do I want to be and what do I want to do and what would make me happy. And I decided, you know, through lots of work trying to figure it out, that interior design was my passion and I loved it. And I owned a house and had done some construction projects and had done design for friends. And I just loved it. And I thought, wow, you know, I have to work for another 20 years. So if I'm going to work for another 20, I just spent 22 in sales. So if I have to work for another 20, I could potentially have a huge career. So I decided to start my own business and I went back to school. And I did two programs at the same time because it was COVID. So everything was remote and online. So I went back to school. I did two interior design programs in New York City and started my business. and started taking on clients in May of 2020. So we're coming on almost 4 years here that I started that. So, you know, that journey of trying to figure out what to do next was a lot of time spent journaling and talking to people and having a career coach and doing a lot of reading from people who wrote about their experiences of how they shifted careers midlife. Because that was me. I was about to turn 50. And I'm venturing into a whole new field. But I am so glad I did, because it has just made my life so much better. And I have a purpose and I love what I do. And I've met some of the most amazing people by making this shift in my life and taking myself out of corporate America and becoming an entrepreneur, which if you had asked me 5 years ago if that's where I would be, I would have said, no way, I'm never owning my own business. And here I am now with multiple ones. So it's been a pretty exciting journey that I enjoy the opportunity to share with people.
Yeah, I can imagine that, you know, like from corporate America and then all the way until only 4 years earlier, then you started your own business. Well, I'm pretty sure that was something that you never thought you would start. And, you know, in the end, you actually started after a while later. But have you ever thought like why it took you so long to actually start this? Or is it just you being like one with the universe, like what you actually mentioned in the book?
Right. You know, it took so long because I'm not unlike other people in the sense that it's scary to take a risk. And I would have, you know, getting fired was the push that I needed. I don't know that I ever would have voluntarily quit and decided I'm going to quit and start my own business. I could have, maybe, but it would have taken me longer. I think it would have taken me longer to get there. I think I would have probably always ended up where I am now, but I think it would have taken me longer. And a lot of that is, you know, the fear of the unknown, which is very similar to what many people have, is the fear of the unknown. But once I was faced with that crossroads, which is what I write about in my book, it's like we all have these crossroads in life that we're forced to have to face and change, that we have to make decisions. And I found that once I was forced with that crossroad, then I was able to very clearly identify, what do I want? How do I want to feel? What do I want my life to be like? And then dive fully in 2 feet to that path in the crossroad. So in my life, I've done a very good job, I think, and that's the lessons I share, of how I've approached these crossroads, because so often people get stuck in the crossroad and they can't move out of the crossroad because they don't know or trust themselves enough to make that decision and then finally go all in with that decision. They might take like 2 steps to the right and then they come back to the middle and then they go 2 steps to the left and they're just not sure. So in my book, by sharing my journey, I can hopefully help people see how I have done that and how I've been able to make those decisions and the resources that I used and the mindset that I needed to have and how I was able to trust myself. And then it's like anything else. After you do it a few times, you then can talk yourself into trusting yourself again in the future when you have fear, because you can look back and reflect and say, oh, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. I was scared to death, but I jumped in and look, the universe provided and it worked out okay. And so then that helps once you've done it once and it works out okay. And working out okay is not always it working out the way you thought it would. And so that's important too. It doesn't always work out the way you think it will, but it does always work out if you do it correctly and really think about why you're doing it and what you're doing and if you're following your passions and your heart and really trying to make yourself a priority in your own life. And I write about becoming the designer of your own life. It's your life. Let's design it, right? Don't just sit back and be passive and let someone else design your life. You design your life. You're the architect of your life. So I think my story helps people be a little motivated to take some of those risks. And I share how I did it, why I did it, what I fall back on when I'm scared, because I'm still scared. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'm starting I don't know how to do a podcast. Are you kidding? I'm learning like everybody else. Like I'm learning along the way. But learning is exciting. And so I think when I talk to people, they get excited because I'm like, it's just like books, right? Talking about book thinkers. Books are so exciting. They can educate you so quickly. Just by reading, you can learn so much. Someone's decades, as Nick says, from book thinkers, like decades of someone's experience can be condensed into a book and you can learn from that in a few hours of reading. And that I think is so exciting. And I love to be able to talk to people about that.
Yep, I agree. And for those of you who are tuning in, who are listening in to the episode, can check out this book called To Fit In, Lessons from an All In Life, okay, which was a memoir on Jean's life, on her entrepreneurship journey as well, her life journey as well. And of course, you know, I would say that it's really rich in a lot of experience. Like what she mentioned earlier, like those hours that you're reading, it's life, 40 plus years, 50 years of life condensed into 200 plus pages of this book. And you can actually learn a lot through that. And, you know, many times we always wanted a mentor and then, you know, we can't pay these mentors, but we have these books to be our mentor in a sense. So I truly believe that, you know, this is a really great one. And of course, we'll be touching on how to be designer of our life and et cetera later on as well. And I would like to ask you, right, while you are building your business for the past 4 years, close to 4 years in a sense, so I would like to ask, have you actually experienced any failures? And if you have, do you have a favorite failures of yours? And how has that failure or apparent failure set you up for later success?
Ooh, what a good question. Yeah, I mean, you definitely have failures. So, you know, I have business failures, and then I have client relationship failures, because not every client relationship works out great, right? Fortunately for me, most of them do, but you know, we're in a service business and you can't always please everyone. So from a business failure perspective, it happened pretty early on because I was like, you know what? I can do everything, right? This is part of being an entrepreneur. You got to do everything, right? You have to wear a lot of hats and you have to do everything. And so I felt like, you know, I'm pretty good with Excel. I'm pretty good with numbers. I can figure out, you know, this QuickBooks thing and how to run my business on the back end. And so I was doing all of that myself. Until I started to get these penalty notices from the state of Connecticut that I hadn't filed my taxes right, and I was supposed to file some annual report, and there were all these things that I was supposed to do. And I had, you know, payroll, I had someone working with me, an assistant working with me, and I had done everything with payroll incorrectly for her. And they were fining me and charging me, and I owed all this money. And I just thought, oh my goodness, major business mistake here. I am so in over my head because I don't know enough about bookkeeping and I don't know enough about this. And that was a nice mistake and it cost me a bunch of money. And then I went and immediately hired a bookkeeper because they know what they're doing and I don't know what they're doing. And what my bookkeeper can do in an hour was taking me, you know, half a day because I didn't know and I had to do the research. And so big lesson there by that failure was to really teach me to understand that if you don't know how to do something, sometimes it is better to invest and spend money to help you do that because, you know, it ended up costing me more money in the end than I would have spent had I hired one in the first place. So that's the first business mistake. And I have had one client. I really was just doing some consulting work for them and some design work. And we were designing a pavilion for a pool that didn't exist. And I had done a bunch of work for her, hired an architect to help. We'd been working on the design. And then we got to the stage of getting quotes from builders and they were three times outside their budget. And so my client, you know, got really, really upset because there was no way that her husband was going to pay that. And all along, I had made the mistake that I never really understood that they had a budget for it. And so part of it was a communication error. But, you know, and then I felt horribly because I really upset her. So we parted ways at that point in her project and she took over. But it bothered me personally. I think it really, because you do this and you're in a service business and you want to make people happy and you want to provide things that make them happy and make their lives better. And so by upsetting a client so much that she wanted to part ways, I wasn't making her life better. And so that hit really hard. And I, you know, I did learn from it. Just, you know, I have to be really buttoned up on my communication with clients and make sure we're really on the same page every step of the process, more so than I was in that instance, because that project was structured a little bit differently than what I normally do. So okay. I learned from that one. You know, you learn as you go along. You can't make everybody happy, but I feel like the longer you're in business, hopefully the better your processes get and your systems get, and the more questions you ask and the better the communication becomes between you and your clients, so that your clients do end up happy.
Right, I agree. So eventually, how do you resolve that? I mean, like, she's very upset. How do you do a did you manage to do a service recovery with them, even though you guys parted ways after that?
I mean, I think we left on decent enough terms, you know. I just genuinely apologized, you know. I had to genuinely apologize for my error and for my lack of understanding. And I think sometimes that's just what you have to do, is just apologize, and that was not your intention, and that you misunderstood, and you apologized for the misunderstanding. And, you know, I gave her money back and, you know, and didn't charge her for a bunch of my time that I had already used, because that's kind of the best you can do in that situation, is to part ways. And, you know, I have spoken to other designers, and sometimes they do end up parting ways on projects. And luckily for me, this was a small project. It was just more design of my time. So luckily for me, that parting ways was on a small project. But, you know, you learn from it enough that sometimes parting ways is best. And that's okay. You know, that's okay.
Yep.
Parting ways is yep. sometimes best, you know? And that's fine. It just, like, sometimes it's okay. I've learned over the last few years, sometimes it's okay to turn down business. If a project doesn't feel right, and I don't feel like there's a good connection between me and the potential client, that's not going to get any better as time goes on. You know, when you work with an interior designer, we work really closely together. We spend a lot of time together, and I get to know my clients very intimately, and we become friends. And so if it doesn't feel like that connection is going to happen in the beginning, I've gotten comfortable with saying no and trying to send them off to a potentially different designer who might have a different energetic connection with them, to get them what they need in the end.
Okay, nice. And, you know, Jean, for you starting out your own business, I'm pretty sure you have met some mentors along the way, and even get coached by them, or even get some, you know, in terms of like training and whatsoever from them, or advices from them. So can you share with us, like, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received from these mentors?
Oh, my favorite. So you are right. One thing I do share with everybody is, don't be afraid to ask for help. And seeking right. out a good business coach that has knowledge and experience that you don't is great. It's necessary. It really is. And everybody grows because you get to learn from somebody else. So the greatest piece of advice I received actually is not related to design. It's actually related to time. Mm-hmm. And it was from my first like real coach for my business. When I started Jermar Designs, I hired a woman and worked with her for a little over 2 years. And she was an interior design coach. And she taught me so much about how the business works and how to run a business, basically, because they don't teach you that in school. Interior design school, they teach you about the design part of it, but they don't teach you about the business side. So you step into it not really yeah. knowing much. So I hired her to help me. But her greatest piece of advice that she gave me is actually about time. And she talked about this 1-4 rule. And she talked about identifying people in your life who are negative versus positive and have a positive energy versus a negative energy. We had to go through this exercise of, you know, the left side is negative on a piece of paper, the right side is positive, and write down all the people that you interact with in your life, in your personal life and with your clients. And her lesson to us was, look at all those negative people. And if you spend an hour with one of those negative people, if they remain negative and they suck your energy out, you need 4 hours with a positive person to get your energy back to middle. And I really right. thought about that. And I really took that to heart, because she's so correct. If I spend an hour with someone who I feel is constantly complaining and drags me down, and I'm sort of spending that hour with coffee with them out of obligation because they're an old friend or something, When I leave that, my energy is so low. And so the energy that I'm putting out to everyone else that I interact with after I leave is not me. It's not positive. It's not helpful. So not only is she impacting me, she's also impacting everyone else that I interact with for the next few hours in a negative way, because I'm annoyed, right, and I'm agitated and I'm frustrated and I'm just in a depressed down state, as opposed to spending an hour with someone who's exciting and interesting and invigorating. Like when I go on a podcast, I leave a podcast and I'm like, oh my goodness, I am so excited. I learned from these other people. And then I carry that forward then into my day. And so her 1-4 rule, I have really taken to heart. And I would say that has had one of the biggest impacts in my time as being an entrepreneur and thinking about how I spend my time, which clients I interact with. Because if I meet them and I start to feel that energy drain from the beginning, I'm like, don't do that. Because if I spend 1 hour with them, I have to find 4 hours with somebody else to bring me back up again. And I'll walk away from a project just because of that. I'll make different choices, right, in my networking, you know, as I'm networking to try to meet different people. You know, if someone feels positive, then I'm happy to spend an hour of time with them. That's great. That's such a benefit to me. But if someone feels like they just want to complain, then that's not a good use of my time. So I've made really great personal and business decisions based on that advice. The 1-4 rule.
Okay, nice. This is one of the questions that I wanted to ask you late, which is later on, but this is really nice, to the 1-4 rule, which I actually read from the CEO World magazine that actually featured you on that.
Oh, right.
So I was like, oh wow, this is interesting. The 1 hour with negative stuff or negative thinking, negative people will lead you to need to spend more time, 4 hours or more, with people who give you more energy and a more positive vibe rather than people who are actually sapping you away from that. And so I would like to ask you, right, Jin, if you could have a gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, what would it say and why?
Another really good question. If I could have a gigantic billboard, I would focus on this concept of inner peace, which is, I encourage everybody, happiness is this concept that we talk about all the time, right? And I have goals. I want to be happy. I want to be living a happy life. Well, happiness can be defined in so many different ways, and happiness can come and go. But I think for people, if they could find a way to get inner peace, and so my billboard would say, inner peace is the key to truly living. Because if you have inner peace, then as the happiness goes up and down, because things happen in life and not every day is sunshine and roses by any means for anyone, but you have inner peace, then you have the core foundation to keep yourself grounded and to keep yourself and your mindset in a good headspace. So I would focus on striving for goals of inner peace. And that means that you're also okay with where you are at that time. And that might not be the end game with your career, but you find a peaceful moment with where you are in your current state and your present state, and recognize that it's all just a journey and it's all a road and it's a process. So that would be what my billboard would say. Inner peace.
Oh, nice.
Inner peace is the roadmap to truly living. Yeah. Inner peace.
Nice. Wow. Yeah. Nice. Well said. I love this. Inner peace is the roadmap to truly living. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I would say that, you know, inner peace to truly living is something like what you mentioned in the book, one with the universe. When you are one with the universe, you are having that inner peace and you ain't really that you know, frustrated when things don't go your way and things like that. But just want to ask you, right, how can we actually incorporate such mindset into our lives to have greater inner peace and happiness?
So a couple of the things. So one of my favorite way to do that is to journal. I'm a huge believer in writing and the power of writing. And so I like when I'm sort of stuck or frustrated or feeling a little bit down or not motivated or a little depressed about what something is, you know, going on. I will journal, and I will journal specifically about all the times that the universe did provide for me and all the times that it did work out. And so, and sometimes depending on where I am in my headspace, you know, that journaling is slow. Sometimes it starts a little slow in terms of like, let's talk about all the times it worked out, focus on the positive. And if you're in a really negative headspace, sometimes that's hard. So I will sit down and I will journal. And if I really just let go and you treat it like a, just like you would a brainstorming session, right? Where there's no right or wrong and you just start writing words, mini sentences, things like that. I find that I very quickly can start to write multiple pages of time where the universe did provide, or I was fearful, or I was upset, or I was anxious, or I was in a negative mindset, and yet I was able to overcome that negative mindset, because the negative mindset is natural. We all have it. I talk about like this little bird who sits on my shoulder and talks all day long. We all have that inner chatter, and it tends to be more negative than positive. So the key is, how do you quiet that? And you can quiet that by staying present and by trusting the universe. And so to stay present and to trust the universe, you have to be able to reflect back on all of the times that the universe did provide. So I find when I journal about it, I am then able to help myself stay in a much more positive mindset of saying, okay, it worked out all of those other times. So let's just have faith, trust in the universe. I do, you know, a little bit of meditation. I do this sort of like hand movement. I put my hands out like this. You can't really see this like this. And just trust that, you know what, it will be okay. And by going through that process, when I then walk away from that process, I always feel better and I feel more comforted and I have more trust that I can keep myself in a positive mindset. And if I start to then sway off into a negative mindset, I go right back again. And it's like, okay, go back and read. You don't have to write it all again. Go back and read what you wrote and go through that process again. Because at least I find for me, the challenge is quieting this little inner voice that's sitting here talking to me all the time. And to do that, you need to be A, aware of the little voice, and then also be very present and open and trusting to the universe.
Right. Okay. Cool. Nice. So do you journal every day, or is there a specific time that you journal, or is there an allocated time for you to actually journal?
It is. So I do journal almost every day, but it isn't, you know, sitting down for, you know, 15, 20 minutes, half an hour writing. I do at least journal. I have what's called the 5-minute journal. I tell everyone to go get it. It's on Amazon. It's literally called the 5-minute journal. And you journal for a few minutes in the morning and then a few minutes at night. And it starts with three things that you're grateful for. Because I really believe that trying to stay positive and stay in a good mindset is, you know, the more grateful you are, the more present you can be, and the more positive your mindset can be. So it starts with three things you're grateful for. And my gratitude will range from, you know, the fact that the sun is shining or that my, you know, house is warm to I have time for myself. You know, like it goes big and small, everything. It could just be my health some days, you know, like it's nice to wake up and feel good and not hurt and not have your body hurt and be able to get up. So what I'm grateful for will vary in terms of depth and emotion tremendously, and that's fine. And then it also, after that, I write about three things that I can do that will make me feel like at the end of the day, I had a great day. And what are those three things that I can do? And that would range anything from doing something at work that I've been procrastinating doing because I don't want to do it. We all have those tasks, to ensuring I exercise, to ensuring I read for half an hour every day, you know, or I make time to cook dinner. It could be anything. And those are the things where it's like, then at the end of the day, when you reflect back, you can be like, you know what? I said it'd be a great day if I read for half an hour, and I made a point of doing that because I'm laying it out in the beginning of the day. So I get those three things done. And then you also write about what your intentions are for the day. And it's quick and it's easy. And then at the end of the day, it's the same thing. You just reflect back on your day and the good things that happened. And you can write about the things that you would have maybe done differently or the things you learned. And so it's really easy. So I will do that. But then I will also spend time during the week journaling just more free form about different things that I'm trying to manifest, or if I'm struggling with a subject or struggling with a situation with a client. Sometimes just like brainstorming, I'll just free flow ideas of trying to figure out how I resolve that. And I find that free flow where I kind of actually get out of my head and I just let the thoughts come does help me resolve situations and figure out what to do, because I kind of wrote about it. And I'm like, oh, there's the answer. Okay. Like, I stopped doing everything else and multitasking and just focused on trying to resolve that. And then the answers come.
Oh,
so I do support journaling. I think journaling is a really good way to express yourself and clear your mind, and also be clear with your intentions as well.
Okay. Well, I mean, I've been writing my own gratitude journal for a few years already, and I could see that positive effect in us. But of course, when it comes to journaling, it would be great, like what you've actually done, freestyle form as well, unlike just gratitude journal, because when you just focus on the positive and you ignore the negative side of things and you don't write about what you've learned, then the more it will affect your growth, in a sense, because you're only just focusing on the positive and not really looking at the bigger picture in the sense. And yeah, I really support this. And you guys can actually go and check out 5-Minute Journal. And of course, not forgetting the book on Amazon for 2 Feet In by Jean Collins. It's a really amazing book, and it's a really fascinating, inspirational memoir of her life's journey that you guys should be reading about as well. And now to the main focus of our interview. Jean, can you share with us the inspiration behind the title 2 Feet In and how it reflects the theme of your book?
So 2 Feet In came up while I was writing the book. And while I was writing the book, and I actually can't take credit for it, I had shared my book with a friend who was reading the book. And we were talking about my story and my journey and the process. And he said, you know, you approach your life with 2 Feet In. And I was like, you're right. That is true. And he's like, that should be the title of your book, because that is a theme throughout your life in terms of how you approach your life, how you approach major life decisions, how you approach crossroads, and everything you do in your life, you do 2 Feet In. You are always all in with your life. And I was like, wow. And I kind of sat on it for a little bit. And I just thought, I already had a title for the book. And so I was like, okay, that's interesting, but I already have a title. I Googled 2 Feet In and there's like a children's story or something. And I was like, well, that story's already taken. But then I came back to it and it just kind of stuck. And I was like, you know, that is true. That is a theme throughout the book that is, I'm told, unique to me. Now, not to say there aren't others who live life this way, there are, but that's something that is unique to my story, because I'm very consistent with that approach and I'm consistent with being all in with a decision. And so if I decide, you know, we'll use writing the book as an example. I decided I was going to write a book and I went all in to writing a book. I hired a coach because I didn't know anything about writing and publishing a book. So I did hire a coach to help me with that process because I didn't know anything. And I made a commitment that I would write every day from 5 to 6. And I did. For months and months and months. And so, you know, and I had friends who were like, you really are doing this thing, this like book writing thing? I'm like, yeah, I am. I really am. Because I was like, what am I going to do? Stop now? Like, I already am so invested in it. And that sort of is the approach. Like, it still felt like a good thing for me to do. So I was going to keep going and I was going to be all in. And I set goals and I set deadlines for when I wanted it to be done. And that's how you get things done. And that's, you know, how I live life is I make commitments to things. I make the time for them because I make the commitments to them because they're important. And then I go all in. Yep. And that's how I've been able to achieve, you know, not only great success in my life, but also a sense of inner peace and happiness as well. Nice. Back to my billboard, right? That's the goal.
Yes. Back to your billboard. Right.
Back to my billboard. And I also think, like, when you talk to people about that concept, like, you can probably reflect on your life as well and be like, you know, she's right. There are times that I did that too. And most people have times where they have felt like they were all in with something that they did. And so my goal is to encourage people to just do that more. And I think you could even say, like, oh, if I reflect back to starting a podcast, like, eventually you got to the point that you were all in, you were moving forward no matter what, like, you were doing it. And yes. We all have that. It's just, I'd like to encourage people to do that more.
Okay. Awesome. Wow. I really love that, you know, you are all in really committed and consistent in writing your book. If not, I wouldn't be reading this amazing memoir. I wouldn't be able to read this. I wouldn't be able to, you know, enjoy the storyline that you have. Of course, you had many setbacks, especially with your mom being so negative and with your stepmom, who is so positive in life, and she's the one who taught you about one with the universe as well. And you know, I felt that as well as a son who has gone through hardships in life and seeing my parents divorce. My mom also was like yours, who's very negative. It made me think, and it truly resonates with me, and how, you know, my stepmom as well is so positive and allowing me to see things in a different light. And she's very gentle towards me, and of course strict. And when it's time for discipline, you get that discipline as well. I mean this is how
they are parents after all.
It's okay. And I really resonate with it, and I felt it, especially when I read how she gave you that independence of going, I would say that going to do whatever you want. And of course, not just that, but also bring you more fun into your life in a sense, because you guys get to go camping, get to go enjoy a lot of stuff, concerts and whatever that you don't really get to spend so much time with in terms of your mom. And of course, in your book, right, chapter one, A View of the Past, you actually mentioned that you have this belief that your worth was determined by your wealth. So would you say that this is still true to this date?
No. My worth is not defined by my wealth. Not at all. I really focus so much more on what I can do to give back and to help others. And if I am touching other people and connecting with other people and helping people live a better life, that is wealth. Wealth is not just money. Money is this, you know, tangible thing that we've created to buy stuff, right? So recognizing that wealth can have such a greater definition than just having money. Now, that did not happen quickly or easily by any means for anybody who might be listening to this. Like, that was not an overnight realization. I spent a lot of time trying to understand my connection to money and my own self-worth being connected to money, because that was an environment that I was raised in. I was raised around a tremendous amount of wealth, but I was raised not having that wealth. And I was raised with the mindset of, we can't afford it, we can't afford it, we can't afford it. And so I believed that if I was going to have value in this world, it would only come if I had wealth as well. So it took a long time to get away from that. But it's a much better mindset to have, because, you know, I say all the time, when you think, like when I changed my careers and I thought about it, it was like, okay, what am I going to put on my tombstone? Right? I can't put vice president of sales. I can't put, you know, millionaire. Like, that's not it. Those are not the things we want to define our lives by. So taking a pause and really figuring out, you know, what do I want to define my life by? It's got to be stuff that is much more powerful and positive and energetic and kind and giving back than VP of sales and millionaire. Like, yeah, okay, nice goals, but that's not it. You know, that's not how you define yourself. It's like, I love when people in their podcasts will say, you know, or people, I get this a lot of times in interviews, people say, you know, how do you define yourself? And you can't start with your job, because we normally start with our job. Our culture is to start with our job is how we define ourselves. And when you have to like think about it in your head, like, okay, if I define myself, don't start with your job. Start with other things, you know, and
it can be like, start with I'm a person of value.
Right. It's like, start with some personality trait of yours, you know, like I'm passionate, I'm driven, I'm energized, I am energy, I am positive energy, I am, you know, there's so many things that you can be. I'm at peace, I'm happy, I'm changing people's lives, I'm improving people's lives. I'm living my dream. I'm living my best life. There's so many things that you can say. I'm learning every day that can define who you are, someone who believes in learning and education, I think is, you know, way more exciting than just saying like, I'm a millionaire, you know. Not that I don't want to be a millionaire, because that would be really nice. Like a multimillionaire would be good. You know, we need to pay the bills, but that's not at the forefront of it anymore.
Yep, I agree. And, you know, for those of the listeners who are tuning in right now, if let's say, right, Jean, they have such belief, what advice would you tell them? If they have such belief that, you know, wealth, I need more wealth in order to prove my worth, show to the world that I am powerful in this entire nation or entire universe, in a sense.
I would say that wealth doesn't make you a good human. Wealth doesn't necessarily make you a good person. It doesn't make you someone who gives back or has good values or good ethics or good morals. Wealth just means you've managed to accumulate one thing, which is, you know, financial. That's it. It's just, but wealth doesn't make you a good person. And I would say, you know, why don't you focus a little inward first on who you are and who you want to be, and focus less on the wealth. And if you're doing things that are making you a good person and that are helping other people, the wealth will magically follow right behind it, because the universe wants to reward you and compensate you in ways that will make you feel satisfied and at ease. And having financial ease is important to all of us. We need some money. We don't want to be stressed about our bills. So if you just change your focus on giving back and gratitude and being a good person and being kind and focusing inward on who you are, the universe will provide the other part. And there's so many people who have stories of great success, of great financial abundance, because they chose to focus inward as opposed to focusing outward.
Well, this is really great advice. I really love it. I truly agree with you on that. Like, if you focus on just the external beauties of life and external wealth and of things, then all the more you wouldn't be fully satisfied, because you'll be thinking, oh, what's the next watch I'm going to get? What's the next car I'm going to get? What's the next Gucci bag I'm going to get? Or the next clothes I'm going to get? Or, who is the next boyfriend or girlfriend I'm going to get? Because I'm not satisfied with who I'm with right now, in a sense. Right. And yeah, I totally agree with you in that. And I truly believe that for those of you who are tuning in, you have to actually focus inward, because many times our environment could have been really negative, like how Jean has actually went through it, how I actually went through it during my younger days, and how she actually evolved, you know, from there as well. And I would like to actually ask you, Jean, how did you manage to change that negative mindset of yours, which you inherited from your mom, from the environment that you were in, into such a different and positive mindset which you are having currently?
A lot of work. You know, I tell people, like, good things take work, right? They don't just happen. You know, therapy, a lot of reading books, about a lot of reading, a lot of journaling, a lot of exercise to figure out why I have those negative emotions. But I also think an important thing for people in my story is I didn't realize until my first marriage how the impact of my negative upbringing and being around a negative person like my mother, I didn't realize that impact until I was married the first time. And when I was married the first time, because I've been married twice, talk about it both in the book. So my first marriage, what I realized when things started to not be going well, was that I had married my mother, and I was able to see those negative traits in my husband. And it was when I saw them in my husband and I saw how they impacted my life with my marriage, because my husband was never satisfied. And my husband was, you know, I will be happy when. And I'm like, what is this? How do we live a life with I will be happy when? And I had it in a different context than the context of my mother. So I had it in my marital relationship. And so then I was able to see that consistent pattern of a behavior in someone else. And I realized then, wow, I don't want that. I don't want to be living a life with the mantra of I will be happy when. I need to figure out how to be happy now and in my present life, not off in the future and always be waiting for some future state of happiness. And so when I saw that repeat in the behavior in my husband, and I realized that he carried so many of the same traits that my mother carried, and I was able to put it in a different context and a different relationship, that's when it really like opened my eyes to the power of the negativity. And that's when I got divorced from, and I chose to get divorced. When I went through that divorce and the time I spent after that divorce was really when I started to do the work of trying to get rid of that negative mindset and being very aware for myself how often I was negatively talking about myself or talking about others, you know. And it can be as simple as someone says, I like your outfit. My response to that would actually be negative. It would be, thanks, but it's really old. And all of a sudden I became aware that I was actually being negative as well. And just because that was all I knew was how to be that way. But I knew, like emphatically knew, I did not want that to be my life. And so since I made the decision, I was 2 feet in that I did not want that to be my life. I started doing a lot of work with therapy and reading and journaling and doing, you know, online exercises to figure out how to think differently. I'm now 53. I was 31 at the time of that. So I've been spending a long time doing that. It doesn't happen overnight. But that shift started, and also surrounding myself, really like leaning into my stepmother, as you said, so starting to pull that out, that positivity out of people who are more positive, and finding and seeking out friendships with people who are more positive so that I could learn from how they act, and eliminating some relationships that were more negative also was really important. And sometimes that's hard to do, but you need that. Like if you want to change how you think and how you are, you need to be around people that are more like what you aspire to be like.
Yep, I agree. You want to be like, you know, having a relationship like how your dad and Mary has it, which is your stepmom, all the more you have to work towards that direction. But I'm just curious as well. I know this whole podcast is all about entrepreneurship, but sometimes relationship is also a part of entrepreneurship as well. Yes. And there's some golden nuggets that we can learn from it as well. And you actually mentioned that you went to work on yourself, and after that, you know, I'm pretty sure you actually went on to a second marriage, which was also written on this book as well, to fit in. So I'd like to ask you, right, what happened after that? Because you worked on yourself, you're more positive, you're more positively charged, and I would say you're more loving and working towards that direction which your dad and your stepmom have. But what contributed to that second marriage, I wouldn't say 100% a failure, but
not working out, right, it's okay, you call it a bad choice. I think the interesting thing about my second marriage, and I'm forever grateful for my second marriage because I had my daughter as a result of that, and that was the greatest gift I had ever been given at that time, and still is. So I will never regret that decision because I have my daughter as a result of that relationship, and I also grew tremendously as a result of that relationship. But I think one of the things that happened with me forming that relationship, which is actually something I talk about a lot when people ask me for advice for people who are younger, is I was following the timeline and the expectations of society at the time. And I got so wrapped up in that timeline and the expectations that I didn't pause enough. I paused a little bit, and both of us did, my ex-husband and I both did pause a little bit to be like, is this really right? But then we just kept going, right? Because I was 34, I wanted to have a child. We on the outside had this, you know, we owned a house, we owned a nice 5-bedroom house, we had lots of property, we were both doing well in our jobs. We were following the timeline of what we were supposed to be doing at that age, at that time. And so, in fact, we were almost behind, and it was like, okay, well, you have all these things, so you should get married, you should have a child. And we did. I got pregnant right away. And because I think we both, me in particular, got wrapped up in the time frame of this is when you're supposed to do stuff. And I really felt like, okay, this is probably enough. Like, this is enough. And I think a lot of people get themselves in the same situation I did, where I was like, this is good enough. Who am I to think that I should have more or that it should be different? Because he's a nice guy. He is. He's a very nice guy. He's a good father. He's a nice guy. We lived in a nice house. We had an amicable relationship. Like, you know, he didn't beat me or anything like that. So I think we get into a situation sometimes where we feel like we are not worthy of more. And a lot of that's with how we were raised and how it began. And we feel like we're not worthy of more. And so I followed the timeline and I felt like I wasn't worthy of more until a friend of mine said to me, you know, where do you see you? As I was struggling with our relationship. And she said, where do you see yourself in 2 years? I said, we'll be divorced. And she's like, so if you can tell me now that you will be divorced in 2 years, why are you going to go through those 2 years? You know, why are you going to go through 2 years of negativity and agony and upset? Where if you did something about that now, 2 years from now, think about how much farther you could be and how much more evolved your life could be. Why are you willing to give up those 2 years? And I was like, you know what? You're right. And I did jump 2 feet in and I decided I was going to get divorced. And, you know, shocker for anyone who hasn't read the book, I did that when I was 6 months pregnant. And that is not normal. Most people, when they're 6 months pregnant, don't like raise their hand and like, you know what? It's time to get divorced. Like, Jesus that is, Christ. I was 2 feet in with that one and I was 6 months pregnant. And yeah, that's a lot. And so there's a lot bundled into that. And yeah, and I'm glad that that was the decision I made. You know, I mean, my husband's remarried. He's very happy. You know, we're both really happy. We both have great lives. We've raised an incredible child. It's not to say everything was great all along the way. It wasn't. But, you know, all in all, as two divorced people, we get along pretty well. So we're very fortunate in that sense. And we've managed to raise a child who's incredible, that we're both very proud of. So it ended up being the right decision at the time. But following the timeline and thinking you're not worthy of something more. And people stay in relationships because of fear too. The fear of the unknown is often a reason why people will stay in a relationship when I talk to them. So you have to be trusting that if it doesn't feel like it's right or it's helping you be your greatest self, then go out there and do the work to try to attract what could be, you know, more aligned with your true self.
Okay. Wow. Nice. Nice.
So now everybody needs to read the book to get like the full story and all the dirt behind all of that.
Yes. I mean, like, you know, 6 months
pregnant. Go order the book, 2 feet in, because there's a lot. It's a novel. It's interesting. It actually reads a little bit. I've been told it reads, and I think this is true. It reads, it's a memoir, but it reads a little bit more like a novel.
Yeah, it reads like a novel.
It
gives you a huge picture of how things are going. And when you, while I was reading this book, I was like literally imagining how things were going, especially when you were talking about how you went out with Paula, which is your sister, and then you brought her out to the train station and how you actually went for a mini adventure, which became a little bit disastrous because you you lost your way. You went to New York City.
And we were young, by the way. We were 10 and 12 at that time. So, or 11 and 9. Like, oh my goodness. And ended up in New York City because we took the wrong
time. Yeah, I know, right?
By ourselves. And thankfully, two kids by ourselves. Like, crazy.
Yeah, thankfully there was a lady that helped you out. And I was imagining how the lady looked like, maybe a blonde, a red hair, helping you, you know. And I was really surprised when you said, and when I read that, you know, you were pregnant 6 months and then you decided to divorce. And I believe sometimes it's also like what I've learned and what I've watched on YouTube. It's about attachment style. Because if you really believe in this attachment style theory, which also can encompass why a person decided to end relationship earlier than expected, in a sense, some could be because they are avoidant. So when they are avoidant, usually they will, when they are getting so close, so intimate with the person, and they started to fear that their freedom will be gone or they will be affected in a sense, then they will start to leave that relationship. And even though it's so magical, it's so hyped up, it's so peaceful sometimes, or many times it is pretty peaceful, but then they believe, oh, they're focusing on the person's negative side of things, and then that's where things go off the charts in a sense. But right. I understand that this is not what we are going to talk a lot about tonight, but we can talk about it another time, or even when we are going to on your podcast, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff as well. And, you know, earlier on, Jin, you actually mentioned about the designer of our own life. So can you share with us, like, how can we actually become the designer of our own life?
So a couple ways to do that. I think the most important, so there's theory and there's process, right? So the theory side of it is giving yourself permission to make yourself a priority. And I think that does not mean that you're selfish, and that is not like you're going to become a narcissist. It's recognizing right. that you have one life. You can control mm-hmm. your life. You can control the people who are in it, and you should control the people who are in it, the things that you do, how you feel, what your life is like, because it is your life and you own it. And so giving yourself permission to make choices that make you a priority is essential if you want to become the designer of your own life. Because you have right. to be able to make yourself a priority. And so when you hear people say, I don't know how I can find the 15 minutes to meditate or journal because I'm so busy with my kids. It's like, you actually could. You could. You need to make you and your health and your mental health a priority and find the 15 minutes for right. that. And get everyone else in the household involved and say, look, Mom's doing this. This is what Mom does for these 15 minutes. Everyone leave me alone and find a special place within your house where you're going to go do that. And everyone knows when you go do that for 15 minutes, everyone leaves you alone. And if you start with baby steps of small things like that, like making yourself a priority and just giving yourself a chance to breathe, then you can see like, oh, wow, I feel better. Okay. And then you can expand on that. So first one is making yourself a priority, right? And figuring out how to make small choices that make yourself a priority. The second thing is my book is scheduled. My book is written in the stages of how you would build a house, right? And so you're at your foundation, right. and right? So you go through the stages. And so what I would say to people is if you really want to be the designer of your own life, whether you're looking at your whole life, you're just looking at your career, you're just looking at a relationship, think about it in those same terms. So think about the foundation, because if your foundation is cracked, everything else above it that it's holding, the framing, the design, everything else is not going to be aligned and is not going to work if your foundation is cracked. So really do some work if you want to be the designer of your own life, thinking about the foundation. So let's say it's your job and you're like, I'm unhappy with my job. Okay, go down to the foundation. What about your job makes you unhappy? Do you not like the actual work? Do you not like the industry? Do you not like the company culture? What about it don't you like? And think about, can you solve that? And if so, how? Because if you did solve that, then everything that builds on top of it would start to get better. So it's really making people, you know, peel back the onion, think about the foundation and start there, and then start to make your decisions and your choices there. And it also changes your mindset instead of just, I'm not happy with my job. Okay, great. Why? And can that foundation be fixed? And the foundation right. that's cracked, if you're talking about your job, might be that, you know what, that industry doesn't excite you anymore. You don't have a passion for what you're doing anymore. And for me, that was actually true. Being a VP of advertising sales, I was not excited about what we were selling anymore. So that's the foundation. If I'm not excited about what I'm selling and the actual work, everything else about that job doesn't matter anymore. So it's going back. That's why I left corporate America, because I just decided that part of the foundation, I wasn't excited. I didn't have passion for advertising sales anymore. Okay, then that means that's not what I should be doing anymore. So let's figure out what is. So that's my advice to people. It's how you start, and then you start in baby steps, and then you build yep. on top of that. You know, so you need the theory of giving yourself permission to make yourself a priority, and then you need the action steps and really viewing your life or certain situations in your life, like how you would build a house, and start with the foundation. Because I think a lot of times if you really reflect on the foundation, you will then find where the cracks are, and then that will help guide you towards how do you improve that.
Right.
Makes sense to you? Can you resonate? Can you be like, I can do that?
Yeah, I can resonate with that, because when your foundations are cracked, it means your value system has some issue, or you know, in terms of like what you want, you're pretty much like lost in a sense. And then from there, you actually need to start with what you have actually mentioned earlier, a 5-minute journaling. You get to write down, instead of, you know, just the gratitude that we have for the things that we are given for that day, like the health and whatsoever not, we also can journal down, hey, so who are we? What do I want to be? Right. And who are we supposed to look for in order that in order to help us, or that has been there, done that, and can help us in a sense? Do I have the cash or money to actually hire them to coach us? Or do I have that ability to actually, or the resources to find these mentors to help us? And if we don't have, then what are the books that we can actually read? And that is one of them, which is this, To Fit In, for example, right? And et cetera, et cetera. So we got to write them down, and we got, but the only thing is this, many people know about all this theory. They would have read about this, they would have gone through causes, or even, you know, met up with their idols through their own podcast, for example, or whatsoever that they have done. And they knew about all this, but they don't 100% do it, right? So how would you advise them to actually do it? Because I know that you have actually written down that, hey, you know, just do it doesn't really inspire you in a sense. Sometimes it doesn't, you know, make sense to you, but just do it, you know. But then after that, it just, that motivation, that inspiration just boom all the way down. Right. So yeah, what would you advise? Right.
So, I mean, so you have to be committed to it. It has to be something that is important to you, important enough that you're committed to it. And I think for everybody and anything we do that involves change or trying to do something differently, if you take small steps towards that, it's much more bite-sized. If you're trying to look at this whole thing, right? Like, okay, I'm trying to build this lifestyle brand of Jermar Designs. That is actually a very overwhelming, daunting task. That's a lot. There's a lot of arms. There's so much. There's branding. There's, oh my goodness, there's so much. My list of things is tremendous. And it becomes very overwhelming and actually almost can be paralyzing in terms of moving forward and steps forward. So when I get in that situation and things are paralyzing and it's like you want this and you kind of know what to do, but you don't, I reflect back and I say, okay, am I committed to this? And so if I am really committed to this, then I need to just carve out really small increments of time, whether it's just 15 minutes and like every single day, okay, every day at 5 o'clock for 15 minutes, I'm going to spend working on that or thinking about that and focusing on that. And it might be I'm spending my 15 minutes on journaling, I'm spending it on meditating, I'm spending it on my business plan. And so it's like, you can carve out 15 minutes. How much time do we spend on social media every day, all of us? If you really think about how much time we spend on social media, we all spend hours on social media. We do, you know, are people spend hours watching TV? 15 minutes. And so spend your 15 minutes on those little things and start to make baby steps towards what you want. And so you chunk it down a little bit, but you have to make a commitment. And so it has to come within you. Like you have to make a commitment to that. And when I was with Nick Hutchinson and from Book Thinkers that we talked about in the beginning of this podcast, we were talking about this concept that you have to have a strategy. So making change in your life is really actually not about willpower. It's more about having a strategy and committing to that strategy. And you can change course, you can change your strategy, but you have to have a strategy about how you're going to get there, because then it takes it out of the mindset of it's just willpower that's going to get me there. It's like, no, I have to have a strategy, you know? So for me, I'm trying to, you know, eat out less. I'm just going to use a really basic example for people. New Year started, I'm going to try to eat out less. I'm going to cook more at home and I'm going to make one new recipe per week. Right. And so what's my strategy, right? So like my strategy to do that, to make myself accountable, is I actually have a meal plan. And so at the beginning of the week, I plan out which meals I will get to eat out. And I plan out which ones I will make at home. And I will plan out which one will be the new recipe I want to try. And I've already made a strategy and I've already planned it out. And so it helps keep me on course, because in some weird way, I feel accountable to what I wrote down on my calendar. I'm like, nope, on my calendar, I said, we're having soup for dinner. So we're not going to order sushi. I said, we're having soup. We're going to have soup. That was the commitment that I made, because my larger commitment is to not eat out as much and to cook more healthy food and eat more at home and try new recipes. And that is, I'm doing that because it makes me feel good. I'm doing that because I like to learn and it makes me feel good. So by making myself slightly accountable for it, that is helping with my strategy so that it isn't just the willpower to cook dinner. I have a plan and I've done this before and I actually stick to it pretty well by having a plan like that. So I just use my example. It's a simple one, but you could apply it to anything.
Yep, totally. We can apply it to anything, like starting to write our own books, our own memoirs, as long as we are committed and we are consistent and we're disciplined enough, man, that book will come. And of course, we have Nick to actually help you to promote your books and you know, book thinkers to assist you on that as well. And even land you on podcasts like mine.
Exactly.
And yeah, and in future, Gene's podcast as well. Yeah, that will be very interesting, right? The Jamar Designs show. And And I'd like to ask you, right? When did you know that it is the right time to go all in with what you're doing?
I knew that it was the right time because I didn't see any other alternative. And I didn't see that a different time would be better, let's say. So it was sort of, okay, if not now, then when kind of mindset to it, right? So if we're not going to do this now, when and why? Why is now not the right time? And sometimes the timing isn't exactly right for various reasons. But, you know, for me, it was, if it's not now, when will it be? And why is it in that future moment instead of the present moment? And when I really think about that for the choices I've made in my life, it has been, no, now is when it needs to be, because now feels right. And when now feels right, then it's a lot easier to jump 2 feet in, because I don't see that any other time would be more appropriate.
Right.
Than now.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I believe that when you can't see other alternatives on what other things that you have to do or you can do, then this one will be the main thing for you to do, because it is what you've always wanted to do, and that's something that you've always wanted to accomplish, and that's when it is the time for you to actually go all in and commit to it. And you know, along the way, you figure out the how as well. And
And sometimes you just, and it's okay to like bounce those ideas off of other people. Because sometimes if you have the right group of friends or the right network, they'll challenge you with challenging questions. So for example, when I decided to buy my house, my financial planner was like, you need to buy a house for tax purposes. You need to buy a house. You're spending so much money renting. You can buy a house. You have enough money. You can buy a house. And my response to her was, yeah, I'll do that in a couple years. I don't want to buy a house by myself. I want to be in a relationship. I want someone to buy a house with. And she was like, why? No, now is the time. It's not then, it's now. And I really leaned into that and leaned into the forcing myself to look at the why. Why am I pushing that off for a few years? Why do I feel like I can't buy a house myself and I need a partner? I need to be in a relationship. And I challenged myself to really look inward about, why did I feel that way? Did I feel like I wasn't worthy of having a house on my own? Like, why did I feel that way? And once I was able to resolve that, then I realized, like, she's right. The time is now. I do need to capitalize on this now. And then I did go and I bought a house by myself. And it's something I've been so proud of, because I really felt like I can't do that unless I have a partner. But I don't I didn't need a partner to buy my house. You know, I financially could do it and I didn't need it. And I had the resources to do it. And buying a house, like, to me, it was like, oh, you're in this relationship and then you date and then you buy a house together. And so I had this timeline of how this was supposed to work, and me buying a house by myself didn't fit in that timeline. But I had to realize it's okay. Like, back to my example of all the other mistakes, like, I was still stuck in that timeline. And once I was able, like, wait a minute, don't be stuck in that timeline. Who's to say you can't do that? Why can't you do that by yourself? You know? And then it's really empowering, because then it's like, oh, wow, you know what? I can do these things by myself and I can make these decisions and I can be stronger. And I can tap into my connections to make it work. So, mm-hmm. You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Wow. Nice. I love it. Love it. And, you know, as we are coming to the end of this episode, I have one last question for you, Jin.
Yes.
Jin, imagine this, right? You suddenly lose everything, your money, your name, your reputation. What will you do from day one to day 30 to save yourself?
This is going to sound crazy. I would journal and meditate. I really would. I would journal. I would meditate to try to have the universe provide the answers. And I would tap into a very small network of friends, not a broad net, just a very small network of friends that I would feel could support me energetically to help me figure out what's next. But I would spend a lot of time looking inward to try to let those answers come to me. And I would journal a lot to just free flow and let the solution and let the next steps then come to me. That would be what I would do. What would you do?
Wow. If it's me, I would do something similar, as in to save my sanity. I will definitely read. I will definitely do what I did before, because I have actually been fired before.
Welcome to the club. So, it's a good club.
Yeah, I know, right? And I was pretty young back then. I was 24 years old. So I actually went on to give myself this mental framework. And that was to tell myself that within the next 5 years, I'm going to be way more successful than who I was. And I was committed to it. I was disciplined. And I started to read books, and not just reading it as a form of entertainment, but reading it as a form of learning and knowledge. I actually started to read books, and I watch YouTube videos, and I listen to podcasts, and I watch TED Talk.
Good.
I even went on to find my mentors on YouTube, people like Gary Vee, people like Grant Cardone, people like Tai Lopez.
Yep.
And I even found this person called Joel Brown. So Joel Brown is the founder of this podcast and also a website back then, which turned out to be a really useful app for me, which is called Addicted to Success. So yeah. it was something that I really went on to watch, listen, and really told myself that, hey, I need to work on myself. I started to rebuild myself again and restarted the whole journey of being a person of more value to the world that I can give. And right. That's when I started to find a job, and then I started to work and started to rebuild that mini net worth of mine, and sure. Then slowly work on it, and then had that inclination of starting my own podcast. And it only started, unfortunately, a bit later. I had the idea of the podcast, but then I started it about 3 years later. So okay. In 2017, then I started my own podcast, which is The Legacy Show, and yep. We only had one guest per month, and now we are filled with one guest per week. Sometimes it's two guests per week or more than that. So yes, so yeah, and I have a lot of inbound emails from many people. Nick is one of them, and okay. many interesting guests that came on board as well. And soon, fingers crossed, Elena Cardone, Cody Sanchez, and many more will be appearing on the podcast. Soon.
Exciting. So, good for you.
Yeah.
So cool. Yeah. But isn't it exciting to see it grow from like a concept to, you know, something that is actually providing value, and not just value to your listeners, but value to you as well as a person, like meeting all these people, like, you know, brings great value to you. And then you get value back by giving it to all of your listeners, which is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really amazing. I mean, like you writing your book and then giving your life's anecdotes to the people around. And it's not just in the States, you know, it's in many parts of the world. And this has arrived in Singapore, in a sense.
It did. Yeah.
I'm really grateful, you know, without that mindset of mine of wanting to be better than who I was in 5 years from now,
right,
I would not have started my own podcast. I would have been a delinquent in a sense. I would have been doing things that many people would love to do in a sense.
Right.
And I believe, you know, in terms of the mindset shift, is really important, because once you shift your mindset, you are able to work on yourself, you are able to improve on yourself. People surrounding you, people who love you, who hate you, who may be neutral towards you, will see that change, will see that growth in you, in a sense.
Yeah, they will. They will. Mindset is so important. Everything starts with your mindset, and everything starts with looking inward. And if you focus on your outward world and don't focus on your inward world, you're never going to get to where you want to go. Like, you have to look in and then recognize that your outward world is a reflection of your inward. And the more you look in and improve the in and feel confident and have inner peace, the more the outward world will reflect the things that you want to join it and be in it and be a part of it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Good for you though. Yeah. Congratulations on your podcast. That's so great. And what a great success story.
Oh, thank you. I mean, it's not 100% success yet, because even though I have big guests, doesn't mean I have millions of subscribers, millions of listeners in a sense, but I'm grateful that I've brought this podcast to many parts of the world. We have actually reached more than 80 countries according to the stats that I have.
Wow.
So even places that I didn't know will actually reach, places like France, places like Uganda.
Wow.
Romania as well.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh wow, I didn't expect, because you know, I thought that this will be just US, UK, Singapore, Malaysia and things like that, but I didn't expect it to go and grow so far out. And even though I'm not super famous in Singapore, but I know people that knows me and they are pretty much of a high stature. And I'm grateful that, you know, I feel that, you know, I don't have to be 100% a celebrity for people to know. Of course, when I have that fame, it will be great, because there will be more sponsorships. There will be more deals coming in.
It'll grow.
It will grow.
We still need money. Yes. We still need to make a living. It's okay.
Right. But I would say that I'm still enjoying the process. It's like what Gary Vee always said. Trust the process, always enjoy the process while you are building your empire, and don't put other empires down, because you don't want to put other people down, but you want to raise people up together with you. So I'm looking forward to that journey, and there are many exciting projects coming along the way, and there are some sponsorships that are coming along the way as well, which I'm really grateful for.
That's awesome.
Yeah, kudos to 2014 Rayson, who actually decided to do something so that I can thank that boy
for
starting something. Right. Yeah, if not, I would have blamed that person, in a sense. Right,
exactly. So yeah, it's good. That's a good place to be in.
Yes, good for you. I agree.
Love it.
Thank you. And before we end, I would like to ask you, what other exciting projects that are actually coming along the way for you and Jemma Designs?
So the biggest one is expanding Jermar Designs to be a lifestyle brand, which we were talking about in the beginning of this podcast, right?
The podcast.
So that's the biggest one. It's just expanding the footprint, the platform, the reach of it. But there's also quite a bit going on with the interior design business and just growing that side of the business, growing the size of the projects, growing the team, you know, making it so that I can spend more of my time doing the high level design work, which I love, and then having designers below me doing more of the detailed design so that I have more time to impact the bigger vision and impact, you know, the high level relationships with my clients. But, you know, so the goal for this year is to definitely grow the size of the projects that would allow to bring on, allow me to bring on that kind of staff so that I'm growing that business while, you know, all at the same time working on growing Jermar Designs as a lifestyle brand and getting a podcast out in the summer and working on a, you know, motivational speaking platform. And, you know, you have to start small, start locally and then grow and grow. And so, yeah, there's a lot going on, but it's fun and it's exciting because it's all really creative. And I have really decided that Jermar Designs are, you know, the focus of that is, you know, to inspire, educate, and create. And that is the platform for Jermar Designs, and that everything that I do needs to fit within that bucket of inspire, educate, and create. And it doesn't have to have all three, but most of the things that I do actually do touch on all three of those buckets. So for me, that's kind of my way of giving back to people, is to be able to do those three things for them through my platform. And whether that platform is hiring me to design your home, or that platform is listening to me on a podcast, or reading my book and getting motivated by it, you know, it doesn't matter, or just following me on Instagram. Long as that's my goal, is to be able to touch as many people to do that.
Awesome. So Jean, where can my audience find you on social media?
Yeah, so I'm pretty active on social media. So it's Jermar, J-E-R-M-A-R underscore designs on Instagram, also on Facebook. I am just starting my TikTok channel, so look out, whole new world for me.
Nice.
I've not been in that world before. So starting that, so, you know, same thing, Jermar Designs on TikTok, and also Jermar Designs on YouTube. So starting TikTok and YouTube, but Instagram is my most active platform. And you can link there to my website. You can email me, you know, Jean, J-E-A-N-N-E at JermarDesigns.com, and happy to hear from people and help people. And if you buy my book on Amazon, you can get it in all formats. It's 2 Feet In, Lessons from an All-In Life. And it's even available in an audio book. You can listen to me for 5.5 hours if you want in the audio version. So definitely buy it, read it, listen to it, write a review. I would be forever grateful.
Yes, and not just that, you can also go to 2feetin.com and actually go and purchase your book, which will link you to the Amazon page as well.
Correct.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure you guys will actually be amazed, mesmerized by the inspiring story of Jean Collins' memoir, okay, 2feetin. So go and check it out, and I'm pretty sure you will be inspired. And you will start to be one with the universe in 2024.
Yes.
There you go. All right. So with that, I would like to thank each and every one of you for supporting and tuning in to this episode. And we will be bringing in more amazing people soon. And of course, fingers crossed, like what we mentioned, Alina Cardone, Cody Sanchez, and many more. But speaking of design, we are going to have another guest that is going to come on board soon to talk about human design, okay, which is definitely different, okay? It's definitely different, but it's a very interesting topic. So stay tuned for the next episode. With that, take care, everyone, and sayonara. Bye-bye. Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of The Legacy Show. I hope it has enlightened you. I hope it has brought you to an epiphany where you realize that this is where you want to go and this is what you want to do. So I hope you will continue to support and also at the same time like, comment, and share this
episodes out to your people, to your family, your friends. And not forgetting that, we have just created a Telegram group. It's called the Legacy Show Family. So you can go and check it out and let us know how you find this group is serving you. All right, so with that, I would like to thank you once again. See you and stay tuned for another episode of the Legacy Show.